Now do I seem to be mic'd?
Wunderbar.
Thank you for coming. I apologize for any boredom you might experience at this sleepy time of the day. That said, I'm going to try and minimize the boredom. In light of that, I would like to invite questions during the talk. Please go ahead, stick your hand up, say, hey, you, and don't feel offended if I say I'd like to answer that later because I have things to say. Okay? So, let's begin with a nutshell. My talk in a nutshell. The first thing that I'd like to tell you is that when we do tomography, we should really report a region of quantum states, not a single point in the quantum process or state space. Because, of course, we do state tomography and we do process tomography in quantum information science to figure out what our systems are doing. Point two, here's how to do it. And there you go. There's my talk. Let me give you a slightly larger nutshell with a larger chunk of tasty nut inside. I'm going to begin, as requested, by trying to review and overview just a little bit. So we use tomography in quantum information science to characterize the quantum states and the quantum gates that we produce in our laboratories. And the ultimate application of this, I would argue, is to build a fault-tolerant quantum computer. And I'm not sure that that's the most interesting thing we could do, but it's certainly the thing that we get paid the most money to do. And taking this as an application, I can tell you that eventually we need tomography that is very accurate, very precise, and also very reliable. Okay, that's all background stuff. Now, some things that if you happen to be a practicing statistician will not be surprising to you. The current methods that we use are all point estimators. These are not up to this challenge. They simply can't do it. The solution is to use region estimators instead. And with region estimators, you can assign rigorous conclusions about what your device is doing, which is a nice thing to do if you want to put together a couple hundred thousand of those devices and try to factor a number, because that's going to be very expensive. And wouldn't it be awful if it turned out your device didn't work? Oops. Sorry, NSA. You paid me all that money, but I didn't successfully characterize my single qubits, and so my computer didn't work. Okay, remember the part about asking questions? You're not allowed to. I'm the only one who's allowed to be cynical here. Okay, and the other point in the sort of moving into new material is that confidence region estimators are the best approach. And I'll discuss some of the options here, and then I'll explain what a confidence region is. And then we're going to get into new material. First point, the most powerful confidence regions are called probability ratio estimators. I'll tell you what those are. Among this class of most powerful estimators, none of which is more powerful than any of the others, but they are the best, we want likelihood ratio estimators because, first of all, they're simple, elegant, easy to implement. Experimentalists, are you listening? And secondly, they are heuristically near optimal in a worst-case sense. So you can be paranoid and assume that nature or your grad student is out to screw you. You're still fine. And then I'll conclude by giving you an algorithm. In fact, this will actually happen in the middle. I'll give you the algorithm for how to do this on one slide. No kidding. And then I'll point out, I won't have time to cover this, but there's a mathematical ingredient that I have a version of it, but it could be improved. Okay, so, you know, for the theorists and statisticians out there who would like a project or a collaboration, bring it on. All right. So, end of nutshells. Now we get the full bowl of nuts. The point of quantum state tomography is to estimate some d by d density matrix row where d is the dimension of my Hilbert space. And I will point out in passing that the estimation of a quantum process, a gate, a faulty implementation of a gate, is isomorphic to state estimation. And that's an interesting subject on its own, but it means that everything that I say about state estimation, you can just go and apply fairly directly, quite directly, to gate estimation. That's the last thing I'm going to say about gates, because I can't draw pictures of quantum gates. In fact, I can't draw pictures of quantum states beyond the state of a single qubit. Actually, I can't even draw the state of a single qubit because of, I would have to draw the block sphere. And I can just wave my hands to draw three dimensions, but I can make pretty two-dimensional pictures, so all of my pictures should be taken to apply to arbitrary dimension states, but all I can draw is the block sphere. How do you do tomography? Well, first, you make some measurements. You have to have at least d squared minus 1 linearly independent outcomes to the measurements that you make. Those are represented by positive operators. I'll just label them M1 through MK. Each of these happens a certain number of times. So I can write down the frequency with which each of them happened. And then in the second step, I use those observed frequencies, N sub K, to estimate my state. Sounds simple. Of course, I've left out how do you do the estimation. So to do the estimation, you need an estimator. And the convention in statistics is if I have a parameter, like rho, that I want to estimate, then I write the estimator as rho with a hat on top. And this is a function. It maps data sets to estimates, to points in the state space. Which function, which estimator should I use? So there are at least four that I could think of off the top of my head that have been proposed. The oldest and the simplest is called linear inversion. This is actually quite simple. I use my counts to estimate the expectation value of observables. So for a qubit, I might measure sigma z, and I might measure sigma x, and also sigma y, which, as I pointed out, I can't draw because I don't have a three-dimensional projector. And if I get, say, one up result and 10 down results, then I can estimate that the probability of down is about 0.9. And that tells me what the expectation value of sigma z is. And voila, I draw a line through here at that expectation value of sigma z. And I do the same thing with sigma x. And where they intersect, that's my estimate. And the problem with this is that you can very easily end up with an estimate that lies outside the set of positive states, a negative density matrix with negative eigenvalues, which implies negative probabilities, which causes your head to explode. This is bad. So we found a way to fix this. The most popular way to fix this is called maximum likelihood. And I'm going to talk more about this throughout my talk. Maximum likelihood, by construction, only gives you things within the block sphere. Unfortunately, whenever linear inversion gives you something outside, maximum likelihood gives you something on the surface of the block sphere, which is to say it has at least one zero eigenvalue, which means you've estimated the probability of something, say an error, as absolutely zero, which is a very dangerous thing to do. Because if that error happens later on in a fault-tolerant quantum computer, it's not a fault-tolerant quantum computer. Another approach is to use Bayesian inference. This is computationally difficult. It requires that you assign some sort of prior distribution over the state space. It does always give you something that is strictly within the state space. So you can trade off more reliable for computationally more difficult. And there's a very recent technique called L1 regularization. This is what's done in compressed sensing. This actually has an intentional bias towards low-rank pure states. So it's not appropriate for fault tolerance. It is perhaps appropriate for getting a pure state on purpose if you want to estimate a pure state, but if you're interested in estimating the magnitude of your errors, then it's not especially relevant. Now, yeah. That is not redundant because we're not usually interested only in qubits. So you could be low rank but not a pure state. Oh, that's certainly true. I think there was a comma in there. There's supposed to be. Sorry, I should enunciate my commas. Okay, so the central problem in simple language is that if we're going to use a point estimate, then we really need to put some sort of error bars on it. I put that in quotes for a reason. Why do you need to put error bars? Because otherwise, that estimate doesn't have any meaning. It's totally content-free. Why? Well, that estimator is never going to be exactly equal to the true state, whatever the true state is, right? There's uncountably many states. You're never going to, it's like throwing a dart at the dartboard and hitting a particular molecule. Your probability of getting the true state exactly right is infinitely less than your probability of doing that successfully. So at the best, a point estimator is close. Probably. It might not even be close. And so by itself, that has no meaning. If you start to quantify how close it is and how probably it is that close, then what you have done is you've converted a point estimator into a region estimator. Okay? Everybody cool with that? All right. So the first key question is, what kind of a region estimator should we use? How should we use these things? They're a tool. What do we want? What do we want to do with a region estimator? So very briefly, let me sketch out the application. I would say that the preeminent application of this kind of tomography is building a fault-tolerant quantum computer. So the problem with quantum computation is that noise is deadly to quantum computers. It would be deadly to classical computers because they, like quantum computers, need to execute 10 to the 20th, 10 to the 25th consecutive gates. But classically, there's this beautiful result that the failure rate of transistors is about 1 in 10 to the minus 20, or sorry, it's 10 to the minus 28. They're ridiculously reliable. And quantum gates are not. They can fail in really weird ways, all kinds of ways for a quantum gate to fail. So to get around this, we design these fault-tolerant architectures out of nested error correction schemes. And the goal at the end of the day is to simulate a single good gate using a large number of noisy gates. This works if the per-gate error is less than a critical value, or it can work. Above that critical value, which is somewhere in the range 10 to the minus 8 to 10 to the minus 3, maybe even a little higher than that. We don't actually know what it is. We can only lower bound it for certain models. If the error probability is above that range, it can't work. So we need really good components, and we need characterization that can be precise and reliable to those levels. So right now, what we have is tomographic methods that say, well, here's a point, and you are probably somewhere hereabouts, I think. What we need, on the other hand, is something that says you are in here with some sort of guaranteed reliability. The solution to this is to use region estimators. So a point estimator is a map from data to a single state. A region estimator just maps data to a whole region of states. And some ad hoc examples include a point estimator that you've grafted error bars onto. You could take a point estimate and you could assign a large deviation bound, which just says, with high probability, I'm within some distance of that point. The true state is within some distance. And another ad hoc example that I'll talk in a moment about is the bootstrap or resampling regions, where you use your data to generate a cloud of points and then take that as representing your uncertainty about the state. But these are just, you know, sort of ad hoc ideas. I'm going to propose something better and more reliable. But first, why do you want to use a region estimator? Concretely, the reason you want to use a region estimator is that, unlike a point estimator, a region estimator can have a rigorous meaning. And the rigorous meaning is, with probability at least alpha, where alpha here is very close to 1, like say 1 minus 10 to the minus 9th, the true state is in this region that I've assigned. And with this, you can justify statements like, this is going to work if I build a quantum computer out of it. You cannot do that without a region estimator. Okay? I will note that both of these statements need to be made a little bit more precise, and I'll get to that in just a moment. So a region estimator is a map from data to sets of states. Here are the things that I want in a good region estimator. First of all, I absolutely must have correctness. The region that I assign should contain the true state with very high probability. The second thing that I want is I want power. I could always just assign, say, the entire block sphere. That would be guaranteed to work. Doesn't tell you anything. So I want small regions, powerful estimators. And finally, just as a sort of a convenience factor, I would like the regions that I assign to be connected. Not very useful if I say it's over here, or over here, or over here, or over here. You know, eventually you get this sort of foam. And ideally, I'd like them to be convex. These are just practicalities. Okay, so before I start telling you what you should do, a couple of frequently asked questions, or at least questions that you might have asked. First of all, this is the experimentalist question. Can't we just put error bars on each measurement and be done with it? There's a couple problems with this. First of all, if you put error bars on each measurement individually, you're not taking account of the fact that there's always covariances between your measurements. So if your uncertainty is really this green blob, but you bound the uncertainties in sigma x and sigma z, well, you've drastically overstated the uncertainty. Even if you did get the green blob with the error bars correctly, you notice that this sticks out of the block sphere. Error bars imply an ellipsoidal uncertainty region that typically is going to stick way outside of the positive states, which is wasting your time. I'm not going to talk about this one. It doesn't work anyway. Okay, second question. Can't we just do maximum likelihood and then use the bootstrap? This is the only method that anybody has used so far. No, it doesn't work. I'll come back to this in just a moment. You might say, okay, fine. We're going to have error bars that are centered around some point estimate, the maximum likelihood estimate, the Bayesian estimate, the something or other, right? My answer to that is, no. This is like if the Wright brothers had taken a car and tried to bolt wings onto it. Actually, have you seen the movies, you know, the funny movies about how people were trying to build airplanes? They did a lot of that. You know how those movies always end? Crash! You don't bolt wings onto a car. You build an airplane from scratch. So we're going to build optimal region estimators from scratch. And at this point, you're going, oh, God, can't you just tell us the answer? I don't want to hear any more of this crap. And yes, I will, I promise. Just give me a couple more slides, and then I'll tell you the answer, and all the experimentalists can leave the room. Okay, so since I've been bad-mouthing the bootstrap, let me sort of, you know, back that up with a little bit of evidence. The bootstrap is a resampling method, and it calculates what are called standard errors. The standard error of a point estimator is nothing more or nothing less than the variance of that estimator, the estimate that you report, if you were to imagine doing the experiment many, many times with the same input state. You would get different results, right? And a lot of people think that standard errors are a good measure of their uncertainty in the parameter estimate. And the bootstrap is designed to calculate standard errors. The way it works is you use your point estimate to generate a whole bunch of fake data sets. That's the imaginary part. And then you do the same estimator on those fake data sets, and you look at the scatter. And from that, you calculate the variance of the fake results, and that's supposed to tell you something about your uncertainty. Okay, this is not reliable for two reasons. First of all, maximum likelihood for quantum states is not unbiased. And when you do the bootstrap with a biased estimator, it is not reliable. To demonstrate that, I'd like you to consider what I like to call the stupid estimator. This is for quantum states, for qubits, in fact, and the estimator is quite simple. You take some data, and then you report the maximally mixed state. You can do this without leaving your bedroom. It is a valid estimator. It's also biased towards the identity. If you think about this, you'll notice that the variance in the estimate is always zero. And so if you believed that the bootstrap told you something about uncertainty, you would say, wow, I'm certain that it's the maximally mixed state. You're not. You're certain that if you did the estimation again, it would give you the maximally mixed state. Circular. The second problem is that the bootstrap calculates the standard error if your original estimate was the true state. But of course, you don't know the true state. Circular reasoning again. So how can this go wrong? Well, let me take an estimator that is, in this case, actually not biased. I'm going to do maximum likelihood on a qubit, but I'm just going to measure sigma z, in which case it's actually not a biased estimator of sigma z. This is just a coin. I measure sigma z once, Without loss of generality, I get up. Well, every simulated data set now that I simulate from my estimate is also up. And so the variance in the estimator is zero. What went wrong? I calculated the standard error if my estimate was the true state. So I hope I've convinced you that we do have a problem here, and we need to do something besides the bootstrap, something besides calculating standard errors. So let me tell you about some good region estimators. Remember, the desideratum that we're focusing on here is that the region I assign should contain the true state with probability very close to 1, alpha. So there are two candidates, two possible good ways of doing region estimation. The first is a Bayesian approach called credible regions, and it's very easy to understand. It's very sensible. You simply assign a prior over states. You take your data, you update your prior to get a posterior distribution over states, and then you assign some region that contains alpha or more of the posterior probability. And so you can say the probability that the true state is in that region, given the data, is at least alpha, which is what we would all love to say. And the problem with this is that that statement logically relies on the assumption that rho, the unknown state, is a random variable and was selected at random from the prior that I picked. Now, even if it is a random variable with some ensemble, then I probably don't know what prior it's selected from. I might get the prior wrong, and then that statement would not hold. And worse yet, it's probably not selected from a random distribution at all. There's some particular state. And if I'm going to be paranoid, like the quantum crypto people, I would assume that it was selected by my worst enemy. And if that's the case, I can explicitly violate that statement badly. So you can't trust these things, which is really too bad. The alternative is called, well, the main alternative, are called confidence region estimators. It's a completely non-Bayesian technique. There is no prior. I'm not kidding. There really is no prior. And it satisfies a slightly different constraint. The probability that the region that I will assign contains rho, given any rho, is at least alpha. Now, the great thing about this is that this is, in fact, absolutely reliable even against adversarial choice of the unknown state. You can sleep well at night, and so can your funding agency. The bad thing is that the interpretation of this is a little bit straightforward, less straightforward and intuitive, but because of the absolute reliability, this is what I'm going to pick. So let me try to explain a little bit more what the right interpretation is. So the defining property is that my estimator, my map from data sets to regions, is a confidence region estimator with level alpha if and only if the probability that I assign a region containing the true state is at least alpha, no matter what the true state is. And this does not imply, given particular data D, rho is in that region with probability alpha. I can never say that without introducing a prior assumption. What this means is I'm using a procedure that works, that always works with probability alpha. Sometimes it will fail, perhaps embarrassingly so, but never with probability more than 1 minus alpha. So the interpretation, just to hammer this in, is that I start with some unknown state, I feed it into a measurement to get data, I feed the measurement into this big machine called a confidence region estimator that barfs out a region. Once I get that region, I do not know whether it succeeded or whether it failed. It either succeeded or failed. All I know is that that machine is guaranteed to work with probability alpha. And it's pretty easy to make that failure probability 1 minus alpha ridiculously small. Okay. Whew. Now let me tell you the answer. So first, the last bit of review. I'm going to tell you about the likelihood function. The likelihood function is cool because it answers the question, what do some data, D, tell us about the unknown state that generated the data? The answer is, what they tell us is completely encapsulated by, encoded, if you will, by the likelihood function, L of rho. It's a function over states. It is nothing more, nothing less than the probability of getting the data that I got, that I actually saw, given rho, as a function of rho. And in quantum mechanics, you just multiply up a bunch of Born's rules. This is not a probability distribution over rho. If you remember nothing else from the talk, remember that. It is a function. You can't integrate this over rho. You need to multiply it by a prior if you want to integrate it. It assigns a value to every state rho, right? So this is a function. And that function quantifies the relative plausibility of different states. So on a cross-section of the Bloch sphere for particular data, it might look like this. The states with the highest value are more plausible. If I take an even more brutal cross-section, I can say these states over here are not very plausible. This state is very plausible. These are sort of plausible. And as you probably know, the arg max, the point where it achieves its maximum, is the maximum likelihood estimator, the maximum likelihood point estimator. Okay, so I hope you know everything there is to know about the likelihood function now. Here's what we do with it. We do likelihood ratio confidence regions. And the rest of my talk after this slide will be dedicated, until Ephraim shuts me up, to trying to convince you that this is not just an easy thing to do, but a very good thing to do. There's lots of mathematical justification, most of which I will try to spare you from. So how do you assign a likelihood ratio confidence region? First, take some data. Second, calculate the likelihood function. It's pretty easy to calculate. Nothing hard about that. Now you divide the likelihood function by its maximum value. You're sort of normalizing it. What you have now, capital lambda, is called the likelihood ratio function. For any given state, it tells you the ratio of its plausibility to the plausibility of the most plausible state. Alex? You need a an algorithm, a program, a subroutine that will calculate it for any row that you give it. Pardon me? Okay. Now, just for convenience, we take the negative logarithm of that. So the likelihood ratio is some function that looks vaguely like this or like this with a maximum value of 1, and I take the negative log to get a measure of implausibility. This is the most likely state. All the other states have relatively higher implausibility or log likelihood. And now I simply assign a confidence region. Remember, I already have the data, so D is given. The region that I assign is all of the states so that this log likelihood ratio is less than some cutoff. And the cutoff is something, it's a nasty function that you can calculate or bound, and it depends on how much confidence you want, and it also depends on how many parameters there are in the state, d squared minus 1. Or if you did an undercomplete measurement, there might be less parameters than that you measured. So you set this cutoff higher if you want 99% confidence, and you get a bigger region. All of this interval within the contour is your region. If you're willing to settle for 90%, you put it here. You get a smaller region. If you want 99.999999%, you put it up here, and you get a slightly larger region. And this is the cool thing. You actually don't pay very much of a penalty for extremely high confidence. That's because I can only draw single parameter functions. Thank you. Okay. Ask that at the end of my talk, okay? That's my last slide. Okay, that was kind of an epic fail. Can I just pretend that didn't happen, please? Ask that at the real end. Okay, so I left out why you should do this and how you do this. So, Ephraim, how much time do I have left here?
7 minutes.
In the next 6.5 minutes, I'll try to tell you that. And in the 30 seconds after that, I'll answer Kevin's question. Okay, a brief outline of what I'm not going to have time to tell you. First of all, probability ratio confidence regions are a class of estimators that optimize the average power, which means they minimize the size of the region you assign, with respect to any particular distribution over states. And these are the admissible estimators. Every best estimator is one of these. Specifically, if you look for the best worst case performance, you get the likelihood ratio confidence region estimator. There's a little bit of a heuristic jump in there. And then my 30 seconds is I will tell Kevin how to describe and use a confidence region, and then I won't actually talk about this. So let's barrel through designing optimal confidence region estimators. This is where the math comes out. Experimentalists, please run for your lives. No, actually, I skipped most of the math here because even I've forgotten it. Remember, we want our estimator to be correct. We demand correctness. Otherwise, we have no basis for reporting to our funding agency, whoever they are, that we are confident that we are right, and therefore they're not wasting their money. We would also like to have powerful regions, but I'm only going to optimize power as much as I can within correctness. And of course, I want connected convex regions if I can. The likelihood ratio estimator satisfies all of those. So in order to get correctness, I observe that for every state row, the probability of all of the data sets whose region contains rho has to be at least alpha. So the nice way to do this is by drawing any estimator as a bipartite graph. On one side, states. On the other side, data sets. I draw a connection between them if and only if rho is inside the region that I report given D. And now I just need each row to be connected to data sets whose total probability given row is alpha. The only question is, which ones? This is where power comes in. Power determines which ones I connect to. I'm going to choose my connections so that I can somehow minimize the typical volume of a region that I assign. Of course, that's a weasel word, so I put it in quotes. What do I mean by the typical volume? First of all, there's no unique way to quantify volume. I've got all kinds of different measures that I could use to measure volume. Secondly, I can't simultaneously minimize volume for every data set. There's a trade-off. It's frustrated. Worse yet, it's still frustrated even if I just try to minimize the expected volume for a given state. Minimizing the expected volume, maximizing power for row one, means not minimizing it for row two. And as Ben Schumacher has told me repeatedly, you can only minimize one thing. So in order to get an optimal estimator, I'm going to minimize the average expected volume according to some distribution over states. So on the next slide, I'll briefly show you probability ratio estimators. And I claim that these exactly solve that problem. A PR estimator minimizes the average of the expected volume of the region that you assign, given that the true state is rho. The average of that over some prior over states. Now, those of you who are allergic to anything Bayesian will go, whoop, 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 he said prior. It's sort of a prior, but not in the usual sense. My correctness, the probability that I assign a ratio containing the true state is totally independent of this prior. All that the quote prior unquote does is distribute the power of my estimator, its ability to assign small regions over different true states. So, for instance, suppose that Andrew White were to choose, brash experimentalist were to choose a prior that was a delta function over the state that they actually wanted to make. What a dastardly thing to do. Doesn't matter. We're still fine. What happens is, at the end of the day, you end up assigning somewhat smaller, slightly smaller regions than you would otherwise for the data sets that are most probable given that actual state. But if you get data sets that you didn't think were very likely, given your brash self-confidence, you end up with humongous regions. But it's still correct with probability alpha, which means that the consequences of this brash choice fall entirely on the experimentalist or the theorist who made the choice, not on the customer who wants a conclusion that is true with very high probability. So it sort of keeps you honest whether you want to be or not. So very briefly, I'll basically make three more points here. Probability ratio regions are really quite simple. You pick some prior over row. You use that basic probability theory to assign a probability, an average probability to each data set. And then you build this graph by connecting each state to the most attractive data sets. Think of it as like a dance, right? One of these dances where all the boys are at one side and all the girls at the other side. And the difference here is that each state has different preferences. This state likes these data sets. This state likes these data sets. And each state also gets to connect to all of the data sets that it likes the most until it has achieved its threshold, total probability, coverage probability of alpha. This simple rule, the attractiveness ratio is just the ratio of the conditional probability of D to the average probability of D. And this simple rule turns out to minimize the average expected volume according to any and every volume measure. This is amazing. You don't have to worry about how you're measuring volume. This is simply the best thing to do. So there's still an adjustable parameter. What prior do I pick? I've showed you that even if I pick the brash experimentalist prior, I'm still okay, but the experimentalist might, he might get screwed because he might end up with a very big confidence region, true but not useful. So how do I avoid that? The simple answer is I want to defend against every possible true state. And since I think I've got like 2 or 3 minutes left, I won't actually go into the explanation of why the way to do that is to assign a prior that makes the probability of each data set proportional to its maximum probability over all states. But it should be sort of intuitively obvious that this is some way of kind of uniformly distributing your power. If you do this, the probability of D given rho is nothing else than the likelihood of rho, and the probability of D is nothing but the maximum of the likelihood function over all rho. And we get back to likelihood ratio confidence regions, where I connect each state row in that graph that I showed to data sets that have the highest likelihood ratios. And I just go down the list, connect it to data sets that have successively lower likelihood ratios until I pick up enough coverage probability. I can write this using this log likelihood ratio, and the log likelihood function looks sort of like this. Kevin, I've drawn something that's two-dimensional here at least. And I pick a cutoff and I draw a slice through that, and there is my confidence region. Of course, it won't be perfectly round in reality because this log likelihood function won't be perfectly parabolic. That's okay, doesn't matter. It typically looks sort of parabolic. The remaining technical problem is that I need to determine this cutoff function. This is a pain in the neck. I'm not even going to talk about it today. I'm going to completely skip the next slide, except to say that technically the optimal cutoff depends on the state, but for convenience, we just nuke that completely. We upper bound the thing with a constant, and that's how we get the likelihood ratio confidence regions that I showed you several slides ago. Okay, so in the next 30 seconds, whether they're my last 30 seconds or not, I'm going to try and answer Kevin's question. How do I get from the algorithm that I just gave you to a publication in Nature? Which, of course, is the point of science, right? Well, I don't think the point of Nature is publication in Nature. Anyway, Maybe if you ask the editor of Nature. Huh? Okay, so really, this is about the most convenient possible prescription for calculating confidence regions. We already have lots of machinery for dealing with the likelihood function, so it's brilliant that it turns out that that's a good idea. But we do have this problem that we've got an arbitrary convex region in this extremely large dimensional density matrix space. I just got an email about half an hour ago from one of Reiner Blatt's graduate students. He said, I'd like to do tomography on our 14-qubit quantum computer. Let's see, 2 to the 14th is 16,000. So the density matrix space is 256 million dimensional. And I need to describe a blob in a 256 million dimensional space. So the first answer is you should use it implicitly if you possibly can. And the second answer is if you don't actually have 14 qubits, then what you can do is you can characterize this blob by starting somewhere in the middle, say at the maximum, firing out rays. This is a simple, these are all simple algorithms, by the way. Firing out about d squared rays in all directions, d to the fourth if you really want to be good, finding the points where they intersect this easy-to-calculate convex region, and then using some cute computational geometry to calculate the minimum volume bounding ellipsoid, or, if you're super lazy, the minimum volume bounding hypersphere. And the bounding hypersphere is described just by a point and a radius, which is actually only one more number than reporting a density matrix in the first place. So you've got a whole array of options, all of which are guaranteed, rigorously guaranteed to be reliable. Pardon me? No, and if that's not clear, please do ask me afterwards. But no, this is not at all the same as bootstrapping. The only similarity is that I drew a cloud of points for both of them. I will leave you. I have a choice of two conclusion slides. I will leave you with the idea that in addition to being practical for publishing in Nature and making people in Washington and Ottawa happy, these are actually a pretty good conceptual tool because, for an experimentalist, this lets you figure out how well your tomography works, Ephraim, without knowing what the true state is. And for a theorist, this provides a robust generalization of Fisher information that really tells you something about uncertainty. Thank you.